We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Hillier Gardening Catalogue read by Harriet Cass.
Gifts to indulge the ones you love. Make her feel special this Christmas with a clothesline.
Thanks to everyone who sent that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, British comedian and actor with a confusing American name, Will Smith, along with the man who won second place in the Mr. Miserable contest in 1979, Jeremy Hardy. And on my left, writer and broadcaster Danielle Ward, along with a man who's actually brought some snow down with him from Scotland, because there wasn't enough here in London for his liking, Mr. Fred McCauley. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Jeremy, what substance is causing delays in all
well, we're nothing
major news outlets?
Nothing if not cutting edge, are we, on this show? weather. Well, you wouldn't know it being in the centre of London, because we've all trolled in from outlying areas and everyone's looking very embarrassed because everyone's sort of arrived in town in snow boots, riding dog sleighs and humming Lara's theme, and arrived in the centre of town and the snow's just not here. I think snow's basically northern and it can't cope with London. Oh, no, you can't settle there. You lie on the ground for a minute and somebody's walking all over you. Oh, no, terrible. Oh, I couldn't cope with London.
It's bizarre how newspapers just default to, you know, five or six pages of people sledging, and that's news. There was a picture in the, I think it was the Telegraph, and it was of a policeman sledging on a riot shield. And can I just say, I don't think he was pursuing a suspect.
The Telegraph said that the weather was treacherous. I thought, you can't very well put moral judgments on it. It's not treacherous, is it?
Treachery needs to be a bit sneaky, and I think having bad weather in winter, not that sneaky.
Yeah,
it?
If there was a very high pollen count, that would be treachery. <I guess. laughs>
Did you see that some pensioners are buying charity shop books to burn? Have you seen that?
Cheaper than fuel, is it?
I think it's people aware how many Dan Browns there are in Oxfam at the moment. I think
we had such cold weather that the River Clyde was three quarters of the way over frozen, and thankfully the council were out gritting it.
Where does all the grit go?
Because cat litter trays.
They did recommend that you can use cat litter instead of grit. Presumably clean cat litter. But then again, what better way of getting rid of dirty cat litter than in the spirit of neighbourliness, hurl it all over the pavement?
Because we're going to run out of salt, aren't we?
But the thing is, it's only for about 3 days. It's not worth a stockpiling grit for 3 days of snow. It's better if we all just do no work. And then they say, the country has lost 18 trillion, billion, million pounds. You think, well, no, it hasn't. It's still there somewhere. I mean, it's just... You know, I mean, it's not gone, has it?
The snow hasn't got it.
No, it hasn't. The money hasn't frozen and shattered because it's so cold. It's all still lying around in vaults.
Or the Tories said that we were going to run out of gas in 8 days, and then actually it's actually 65 days. You know, I don't know about you, but I can't wait for those guys to get their hands on our economy. Yeah.
Parts of Britain ground to halt this week in the worst snowfall since the last one. A shortage of rock salt, gas and anything else happening made snow the top story in most news programmes, including this one. An energy analyst described the Conservative claim of just 8 days gas storage as... alarmist. Oh, sorry, it's really hard to read by candlelight. 2 points to Jeremy. Will, have a listen to this.
Oh, the weather outside, but the fire is so delightful.
Will, whose attempted revolution was frozen in its tracks, and not just frozen because of the weather?
This would be the attempted coup, although that slightly overstates it, by Jeff Hoon, who looks like a melted Timothy Dalton, and Patricia Hewitt, who looks like a stretched Mrs. McCluskey from Grange Hill. And... They got together and I think they sent out a text or an email to try and get Labour MPs to give a vote of confidence on Gordon Brown, hoping that lots of cabinet ministers would kind of join the ranks. And they didn't. And it failed mainly because David Miliband is a pussy. He's clearly all talk in the Commons bar of like, yeah, I'll be with you. Yeah, yeah, you start it and I'll be there. And then somebody blows a whistle, they all jump over the trench, turn around and he's sitting there eating an ice cream or something. And he's not only alienated the rebels now, he's also alienated Brown because he took 7 hours to support Brown. And then he just said, I support the re-election of the Labour government, which is a bit like a suspicious girlfriend saying to a partner, do you still love me? And the partner kind of stroking his chin for about 5 minutes and then going, I love women.
Danielle fancies David Miliband, don't you?
I do, a little bit. Because I saw David Miliband at a dog show, right? And this is my best
what
anecdote
breed was he
ever.
What was it about him that you found so mesmerising?
He loved the dogs, and he's a very attractive man. What isn't there to like about him?
Do you know, I've got such a long list that... I just don't know where to begin.
The sexiest man at the dog show. That really is damning.
I saw Jeff Hoon at the Latitude Festival in the crowd watching Jarvis Cocker.
I once saw Jeff Hoon in B&Q at Derby.
I did once see Robin Cook buying Morrison's own brand, All Brand, once. So that's my MP story.
Do you not think that this whole coup thing would never have happened if it wasn't for the weather? I mean, if Jeff Hoon and Patricia Hewitt hadn't been holed up in a room, unable to leave because it was snowing, maybe they wouldn't have thought of the coup.
It's completely half-assed. And they also, an hour and a half before they actually sent the email out, they sent out a blank one by mistake. I mean, they're utterly useless. I thought the other really tragic thing for Brown was that the second person to leap to his defence or to give him his support was Sean Woodward, who was an ex-Tory MP. It's, you know, it's like, who's on my side? Great, Gollum. I mean, just hopeless.
They did all take their time, though, didn't they? Alan Johnson and Harriet Harman took until 5 o'clock to pass comment on the coup. So either the PM lacks their full support or Deal or No Deal really went down to the wire. I think it'd be one for the other. Gordon Brown's leadership was shored up with lukewarm support from his cabinet after former ministers Jeff Hoon and Patricia Hewitt called for a secret ballot on whether Gordon should go on as prime ministers. As coups go, it was about as effective as, well, Jeff Hoon. Hoon and Hewitt launched their campaign on Wednesday in a coordinated move. Well, I say coordinated. Imagine the Chuckle Brothers trying to put up a deck chair. 2 points to Will. Danielle, have a listen to this.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful.
Danielle, who admitted marriage talk had left him on slippery ground, and not just slippery because of the weather?
Oh, this would be David Cameron.
Oh, yes.
Who doesn't know his own party's policies, so he really is a man just like the rest of us. Because no one has a clue what they're on about. Apparently, he did an interview and he said that he hoped that if the Tory party got elected, that he would offer tax breaks for married people. And then it turned out that it wasn't hoped, they were definitely going to introduce this. So he got a message from someone higher up than him, directing the policy down. He got told off and had to backtrack and say that this was definitely the case until they get elected and then realise that there isn't enough money to introduce this policy and then they'll have to U-turn again.
I mean, it suggests that this is sort of Peter Mandelson of the Conservative Party, doesn't it? Somebody who's higher up than the man who's in charge.
It's probably Peter Mandelson.
It's probably him. Hedging his bets, do you think?
Yeah. Well, it started because Darling pointed out that they had a huge shortfall in their plans. And then the Tories said, oh, no, we would only have a shortfall if we carried out any of our promises. So they now pledge to renege on all of their promises.
Cameron always plays this card of, well, I can't make any actual promises because I don't know what state the finances will be in when I actually come to government. To which I would say, well, just shut up then.
But Tory leaders have to make a big deal about marriage because for Tories, marriage is this hallowed and sacred institution, so sacred it's worth bribing people to do it. And you think there's already plenty of incentives for people to get married. Because when people get married, they reach 30 and they think, well, I've already slept with everybody I was considering, so I may as well keep this one. And And so they marry one, and then they write to everybody that they know, and everybody is forced to give them a present. But this was based on a time when people had nothing. They were still living with their parents. They'd never seen each other's pudenda inside a building. And, you know, they had no belongings. They were starting out in life, and they needed everything. But when people have been cohabiting for 5 years, they've got egg cups. So what they do, they do a John Lewis thing where you're forced to spend 40 quid buying them a quince spoon stand made of Waterford crystal. Or they say, oh, actually, we've already got everything, so a gift of money would be most welcome. You know? I don't mind the charity thing when they say, oh, could you buy an owl for this village in Burkina Faso where we met when we were trekking and everyone was so smiling and poor but unhappy in their simple way.
See, up until then, I was really pleased with that owl you gave me.
No. I think Cameron might have done it on purpose anyway, so we don't talk about his airbrushed photograph.
I'm loving the posters. I'm loving the posters so much. Obama's big slogan, yes, we can. Cameron's, oh, we can't. No. It's so British, isn't it? Oh, no.
We can't go on like this.
No.
Darling, I feel so ashamed. So do I, but we're compelled by our love for each other. But it's wrong. I know it's wrong, damn it, but I love you.
The election campaign has begun already. Actually, I just have to say that because I'm required by the BBC to do balance, right? We've made some jokes about Labour with the coup. We've now made some jokes about the Conservatives. Anybody would like to make a joke about a smaller party of any kind? Anybody got a joke about the Liberal Democrats?
I'm trying to remember.
No, I think that says it all.
Yes.
The election campaign has begun already, with David Cameron confused this week as to whether he had or he hadn't promised tax breaks for married couples. The Tories put up 1,000 posters of David Cameron with the slogan, "We can't go on like this, I'll cut the deficit, not the NHS." Slogans to be rolled out in later posters include, "I simply must protest," and "Now I can take a joke as much as the next man, but ruddy hell." So very clear. So 2 points to Danielle. Fred, have a listen to this.
All the weather outside is
Dean Martin's raking it in tonight.
He's doing well. He's doing well. Fred, who gave the British an icy look when presented with the bill?
This is it's the Icelandic government now. Formerly, the problem was with the Icelandic banks. They owe Britain and Holland £3.5 billion and £20 because we're charging them for the letter reminding them that they owe us £3.5 billion. All stems from the collapse of the banks. And Iceland, just in case you don't know, had three big banks and they all collapsed in late 2008. And really, for a small country to lose banks like that is an absolute disgrace. It wouldn't have happened north of the border, I'll tell you. We just lost two.
Actually, I had a good plan on how to get my money back from, because I invested a bit in Iceland, and I've got Bjork held hostage in my basement. I've sent several notes lowering the ransom, and so far, nothing.
She's a good reason for not investing, because my knowledge of Icelandic culture is confined to her. She's never struck me as particularly fiscally competent. Like, what have you done with my money?
Leave Bjork alone.
Do you like Bjork? Is she the David Miliband of your heart, is she?
No, I think she's brilliant. And Sigur Rós. They've got loads of cool... Iceland's really cool.
That's it.
It's not
They're
just...
the only two.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. It's a small country.
But we've got Dire Straits and Queen.
I've been to Reykjavik once. We went down to the bar and one of the guys that I was with thought, wow, we're so lucky. We've obviously hit town the night that there's an international model convention because everybody was stunningly beautiful. But it was just the girls having a night out.
So, they want to make the money back, go on the game.
If you've been affected by any of the issues discussed in tonight's program...
President Olaf Ragnar Grimsson of Iceland has refused to repay the UK and the Netherlands the $5 billion lost in the collapse of Icelandic bank Icesave. He will instead hold a referendum on whether the money should be repaid at all. We've had a lot of spats over the years with Iceland. We've had the bank thing, we've had the Cod Wars. There was that time I found a hair in my pizza.
Iceland makes Lidl look like Waitrose.
Seafood platter, 59p. Lovely.
I look at those adverts and I think, surely you'd be better off eating the money. It can't.
I once saw Dennis Healy buying a Viennetta. Style dessert.
I saw Anne Widdecombe in a Catholic bookshop nicking a crucifix. Stuffed it up her jumper, she did, legged it out the door, spraying holy water in the man's eyes to facilitate her getaway.
At the end of round one, I can tell you the scores are Jeremy and Will have got 4 points, but so too have Danielle and Fred. And we start round two with a headline from the Peterborough Evening Telegraph.
MPs call for jobs blow to be reversed.
I once saw John Major.
And our thanks to V. Ward for sending us that. Jeremy, why has the US got its pants in a twist with the UK?
Oh, well, now, this is America claims that we didn't tell them about your man, the Detroit would-be bomber. And we said, yes, we did. You knew all the time, because Brown is upset with Obama for refusing to pretend to be his friend. And clearly there's been a collective failure of the American intelligence community to have any sense of humour whatsoever about a man with exploding pants. I mean, come on.
did they discover it because it... as it were, his pants malfunctioned.
Yeah, they blew up a bit, but not very much.
What he should have done is bought them from Marks and Spencer's, because then if they were faulty, he could have taken them back.
Well, it does show that you can't... there is no point in us trying to... in thinking that we can prevent terrorism. If people are prepared to blow themselves up with their own pants, then we might as well say to Al-Qaeda, all right, you win on points, it's yours.
I just wish that these wretched terrorists would stop picking on things like shoes, right? A man picked on shoes, and now I have to take my shoes off every time I get on an aeroplane. And now it's going to be debagging at the thing, and it's just wrong. Why couldn't you put the bomb in a nice briefcase? And you go, oh, you've got a briefcase, you can't take that on. Fine, I'm fine with that, but you can't have my shoes, and you certainly can't have my pants.
Well, the good old days, a big round black bomb with the word bomb written on it.
Yeah.
Then we know where we are.
One airline has changed what used to be kind of standard language when you go to check in, and this is absolutely true. They say to you, could anyone have interfered with your baggage without your knowledge?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. There is only one answer to that, isn't there? Of course somebody could have without my knowledge, because if it's out with my knowledge, I don't know whether it's been interfered with or not. But if you say that, you don't get to go to Heathrow.
It's like the American customs form, which says, are you planning to commit moral turpitude? I have no idea.
Isn't that brush cleaner?
I think so. Barack Obama is reportedly furious that Gordon Brown disclosed that MI5 tipped off the CIA about Umar Abdul Muttalib, the failed pants bomber. What I think for the rest of his life, going to be the failed pants bomber. When a flight attendant asked Abdul Muttalib what he had in his pocket, he replied, explosive device. This contradicts the received wisdom that people with their pants on fire are usually liars. Terribly pleasing. 2 points to Jeremy. Danielle, why are kids seen but not heard?
Oh, this is... there's been a report out that having television on in the background can impair a child's ability to learn speech. Apparently, I think it's a fifth of children have trouble learning words and understanding the speech of other children if they've got television on in the background. It doesn't say if these children are Scottish or not, must point out, in case you're thinking that. But apparently, it's like...
Carry on.
Only 10% of youngsters under the age of 2 have a television on in their bedroom. My rule is, if it can't control its bladder, it can't control a remote. Mm. Surely.
That wipes out a lot of the adult population as well.
Apparently, some children can get to the age of 5 without speaking. But I mean,
really? 5?
5 without speaking, yeah. I know.
Why didn't I have one of those?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. I've got a 2-month-old baby, and I'd be delighted if he didn't speak till he was 5, because frankly, it'll relieve me from a whole load of conversations that are beneath me. I mean, I'm a busy guy. I don't have time for Leo go poo poo or whatever garbage he's trying to communicate at the moment. I mean, he's technically an idiot. It sounds harsh, but I have better communication with the cat. I mean, you know, the cat knows when to sleep, you know, at night, most of the day, and doesn't whine if I put it in the garden. So
actually, apparently, besides parental names, the most common first word is cat, as in, get this cat off my face, I can't breathe, I would imagine.
There was another story saying that children do better if they're smacked.
If they're smacked, yes. up to the age of six, there, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. You think, well, it's something that people... You do it because you've lost your rag. You don't do it because it's a good idea. And then you try and cover it by saying, oh, but by doing that, it'll teach them the value of physical violence. And that way, if you do physical violence in moderation, like they do in France, then when they're older, they can have a little bit of physical violence at the dinner table without going on binge physical violence.
Some woman called Marjorie Gunno, she's a professor of psychology at Calvin College in Michigan, she claims that children smacked before the age of six perform better at school as teenagers, are more likely to do voluntary work and want to go to university, presumably to get away from their violent parents. Children apparently spend so much time in front of the TV and computer games and spend so little time with adults that one child in six has difficulty learning to talk. The other five in six just use Twitter. And at the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Will have got 8 points, but so too have Daniel and Fred. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Q&A section of the Basingstoke and Dean Council magazine.
Question: what plastics can I recycle? Answer: we only recycle plastic bottles. If unsure, ask yourself two questions. One: is the item plastic? Two: is the item a bottle? If the answer to both questions is yes, then you can recycle it.
Thanks to James Phillips from Hampshire for sending us that. Jeremy, when it comes to horses, what's odds on to change?
Oh, this is terrible. They're going to change the odds in horse racing because at the moment you can, you know, have odds like 11 to 4. But younger people who don't know they're born and need a war, despite having had three wars in a row under the same government, can't cope with that. They say, but I want a percentage. I only can do decimal. But it's... you know, 11 to 4 means if you put £4 on something and you win 11 quid. What's difficult about that?
What happens if you put £3 on
it? You get less. What's... and you're not going to win anyway. It's a mug's game. It's all predicated on the idea that you're going to win, and you're not going to win, because if you've ever been in a betting shop, it's not the cheeriest place. There are no swimming pools in the betting shop. There are not, you know, lagoons fringed with palm trees and people lounging with bling and chinchilla drinking Courvoisier surrounded by buxom women in bikinis. There are very sad people with yellow stained fingers and very, very small biros which they hold to make themselves feel bigger.
They're trying to make them nicer now, betting shops. Like, there'll be little cafe corners where you can buy croissants. Things.
Yeah, but they have that in PC world, and it's still hateful.
It's horrible. You know, because they want to attract young people, but yeah, because young people love decimals. But Jeremy's right. When you walk past a betting shop, you don't think, "Wow, sounds like a party in there." It has the atmosphere of, you know, a prison canteen on Christmas Day. It's sort of glimmer of hope, but overwhelming sadness.
Apparently, the reason for this change is because people are not going to the horse races anymore. Surely it's going to attract more people to horse racing. I mean, if you want to attract people to horse racing, get that John McCurrick to clean his coat. I would have thought that would have started.
Stop racing horses and maybe put on some bands or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that would get young people along.
Yeah. Race different animals, because it would be more exciting if you had, like, one horse, one yak, one coypie, tortoise for a laugh, or a really fast tortoise who's in there as a ringer, you know, 100 to 1, who ends up winning it.
Or you could just let the kids shoot the horses, get the guns off the street, and the kids through the turnstiles. I think that's... this is the biggest attempt to get the public interested in horse racing since someone suggested giving the horses funny names. Horse Racing Reform Group Racing for Change will this spring be trialling the use of decimal rather than fractional odds in an attempt to appeal to younger punters and casual fans. Fractional odds were criticised for being confusing, with 5/3 of the population unable to use them correctly. I like this. Traditionalists oppose the changes, which are likely to lead to division. Now. Fred, why might your mobile phone help you remember where you left it?
This is from America. In Florida, they have been creating circumstances where mice have got Alzheimer's, and then they've been bombarding them with electromagnetic activity, and it has actually improved their ability to think. One of the tabloids actually said that the mice appeared to become more clever the more calls they made. Now, I don't think the mice were actually making calls, right? It was just the electromagnetic activity.
You don't want mice making mobile phone calls.
No,
I mean, you're not enough having one in your kitchen without having one shouting, "I'm in the biscuit tin!"
It doesn't work. Can I say it's complete rubbish, this, that mobile phone use cures Alzheimer's, because my dad rings me pretty much every day on a mobile phone, and it's the same questions. You know, can I print an email? Can you get iTunes on the video? It's just nonsense. It's not going to work.
How did they pick the mice with Alzheimer's in the first place? How can you... I mean, do you
they give it to them, I think.
They do?
I don't know.
Because a mouse scurries out from a skirting board and goes, now, what have I come out here? Using a mobile phone may protect against Alzheimer's and even reverse the disease, according to a study performed on mice and published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. Dr. Roger Brumback of Creighton University, Nebraska, urged caution, warning that humans are not just big mice.
I think that's a controversial opinion.
Obviously never been to Disney World. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Smith.
I've got a letter sent in by Rosalind Fieldgrass, which she received from the post office. She says, "Dear Mrs. Fieldgrass, our records show you have not used your card account since 1st of October 2007. As you have not used your account for the last 2 years, we have now closed it in line with the account terms and conditions. When we closed your account, the balance was £0 and nought pence. We will look after this money for you until you claim it."
Ms. Ward.
This is from Andrew Thompson in Devon, and he found it on a news website. It says, "A mother who was fined for feeding the ducks with her young son will not have to pay the charge."
Mr. McCauley.
A Norfolk solicitor who admitted charging clients by the weight of their files is to be struck off after a hearing before the solicitor's disciplinary tribunal. Trevor Hobden told the SDT he had not been properly trained to cost work and that he calculated how much to charge the estates of dead clients by weighing the files in his hand. Which reminded me of a story of an Aberdeen prostitute who used to charge by pretty much the same means. Obviously, I couldn't afford to visit her myself.
Let's take a look at the final score. Danielle and Fred have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Will with 13. Before we leave you, here is an item from the BBC News website spotted by Frida Cooper.
Weather forecaster Philip Avery said the amount of snow forecast is going to affect the M25, M26 and M11, but it's the first dump of the year and we seem to struggle on these occasions.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Will Smith, Danielle Ward and Fred McCauley. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roger Crooks and Gareth Gwynne, with additional material by Ivo Graham and John Luke Roberts. The producer was Sam Bryant.